Have you had a productive day then?
No.
No?
No.
This is the Living Spit Podcast. Welcome to the Living Spit Podcast. Listen to the Living Spit Podcast. It's on the way.
Well, yes, welcome to episode 3 of the Living Spit Podcast with me, Stu McLaughlin.
And me, Howard Coggins. Episode 3. I mean, who thought we'd get this far?
I thought we'd be stumped at episode 1, if I'm honest.
I thought no one would listen to it. I thought that would be a one-off. Yeah. I thought we'd use up all our best material and everybody will stop listening. But no, apparently people are listening.
People are still listening. It's unbelievable, isn't it?
Nice. Yeah. I mean, I think we can both agree that it's a nice thing to happen.
It's a very nice thing. I mean, as you can hear as well from the fact that we keep talking over each other, listeners, we are still in our respective homes. Lockdown is still very much in operation. So we're utilising the technology to make this happen.
I once again had a cup of tea here today, but it's taken us so long to get this all working tonight that my cup of tea is now empty. So I don't have a cup of tea.
Mine's gone stone cold.
But you quite like cold tea, don't you?
I don't mind drinking it.
Mm. Yeah, you see, I can't drink cold tea.
Anyway, this is great stuff. Gold dust.
Yes, this is the Living Spit Podcast, which you know. So each week we're going to give you, the listener, an exclusive behind-the-scenes look at one of our shows. 16 shows we've made.
16 shows? Can you believe it?
Unbelievable. Mm. And we've been absolutely blown away by the response to the podcast, haven't we?
Yeah, absolutely. It's been amazing.
Yeah, so kind of like people have been amazingly supportive and amazingly, well, basically generous financially.
Yeah. So we had a joke in the episode one, didn't we? About we'll have 100 quid or whatever, yeah. You know. But actually, we've made much more than that so far from your generous donation. So thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much. And we'll keep going as long as you keep giving. Basically.
Yeah, yeah. So keep it up, and we'll keep wittering on this thing every week.
And if you can, if you want to donate to the GoFundMe, the link is at the bottom of this podcast, and it's also on our Facebook page.
It is indeed. So please give generously now. We've got a very special treat for the listeners this week, haven't we, Howard?
Oh yeah, we really have. Honestly, I've been thinking about this all week.
Me too. I
was so excited. There were a couple of occasions when a little bit of wee came out.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, we talked about your peenie pad last week, didn't we?
True.
So hopefully you've still got that down there.
If you can hear a wheezy laugh from the background,
then that is the special treat we are talking about. We have with us, we've talked about him in episode 1 and 2. He's taken on a kind of legendary status.
Mythical status.
The one, the only, our director, Mr. Craig Edwards. Hello, Craig.
Hello, boys.
Hello, boys. So, channeling that FHM commercial from the early 90s.
Hello, boys.
Hello, boys. So, Craig, you've directed, every single Living Spit show, haven't you?
Every single one. Well, directed in inverted commas.
Well, we'll talk about that maybe a bit later.
We'll touch on that. And you
were very keen to be involved today, weren't you? You were very keen to be involved in the podcast. I mean, you begged, didn't you? Please let me be on it, boys. And we went, all right, Craig.
If we must.
But it's just the once, ladies and gentlemen.
Just the once. Let's not make this a regular fixture.
No.
So, Craig, how does it feel to be on this, the Living Spit Podcast? You're here.
It's very thrilling.
Is it?
A little daunting as well.
Is it?
I have to say.
Oh. Yeah. What are you daunted about? Are you worried that some skeleton's going to come out of your closet?
Well, it's just that I'm sure people who've listened to the first two podcasts are going, "That's not Craig. Why doesn't he sound like a geriatric Bruce Forsyth doing a bad Midlands accent?"
Well, I beg to differ. I think they're going to listen and go, "Hang on a minute, that sounds like they got a geriatric Bruce Forsyth doing a bad Midlands accent. It can only be the man, the legend, Craig Edwards." Well, I don't know. What do you think, listener? Let us know if our impressions have been in any way close to the truth.
Right. Well, this is brilliant stuff, boys.
It's great.
Shall we crack on with this week's show?
But before we dive into that, let's have some questions and comments from last week's show.
Yes.
So I've got a couple here. Have you got any there, H-Bomb?
Well, you do the first one.
Okay. I've got a couple via Twitter. Phil Kerm, hi, Phil, has said, enjoying your podcast, guys. You should dust down Winston and Adolf and put it back on the road. It sounds like a very funny performance. Well, Phil, you're not wrong there. It was hilarious.
Yeah, I mean, some would say the best show we've ever done.
Well, in fact, Neil Johnson would, because our friend Neil from Clevedon, he's chimed in with a response to that tweet with, "It's one of my toppers of the top LS faves.
Wow.
Fast, funny and fearless, much like the Nativity."
Neil there, a man of impeccable taste.
Indeed.
So Mark Blackham has said on Facebook about the show that we're about to talk about, which we're sort of teasing. "Great show, enjoyed in a crowded pub in Stourpane."
Oh, that's a clue, isn't it?
Yeah,
a pub.
It's a bit of a clue. So,
yes. We've got Chris Lewis has written via the GoFundMe page. He's given us 20 quid and he said, "If I chuck you some dosh, will you please stop talking?"
You see, that's not nice, is it?
That's not nice.
It's not supportive in this time of...
He did follow it up with, "Keep the jingles, though. They're the perfect tonic to all the lockdown misery."
Well,
so that's nice.
Yeah, and he's right in many ways. This show is all about the jingles.
It's all about the jingles.
I actually know Chris, I think, if it's the same Chris Lewis. And I'll give him a punch in the nose next time I see him.
Yeah, but also thank him for his generous donation.
Of course. Yeah, both of those things.
David Phillips via Facebook. Now, he's been on a couple of times. Remember last week, Howard, he suggested we do Antony and Cleopatra, which we thought was a good idea.
Right. Yes.
He says, "Really enjoying the podcast, and you answered my last question. So here's another one. As I'm not getting a cut if you do Antony and Cleopatra, how about a cameo as the Asp?"
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
All I can say to that, David, is bite me. Because the ass bites.
Get out.
Get out.
That's enough.
That's...
Callie Williams on Facebook says, "I want to know everything about Frankenstein. Are you going to do an episode on that show?" Well, probably.
Think?
I mean,
yeah,
it was an interesting one. So let's save that for another day.
Perhaps we'll get Craig back for that, because I know Frankenstein, Craig, that was quite a big job for you, wasn't it? Lots of people to police there with that one.
Yeah, it was a big show, but it was my memory of it. We had a brilliant time making that show.
We did.
Yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
I tell you what, we will do Frankenstein and we'll get Craig in to talk.
Hang
about
on, but yeah, we're offering him that, but we don't know what he's been like.
That's
true. It's early days, isn't it? He might.
Yeah. Basically, Craig, you're on a
watching brief.
Yeah. It's very
all
much.
All I can say is, if the general public want me back, then I'll come back.
Well, you heard it here first, folks. If you want Craig back after this episode, then please comment. Let us know how he does.
I think, Stuart, I think right now what we need is one of the jingles.
I think
there's been
might
a lot
be
of
right.
chat and not enough jingles. So why don't we spin in the jingle and then we can talk about what we're going to do next.
People ask us, where'd you get your ideas? Well, let us tell you, lots of blood, sweat and tears. And now we'll tell you how we maintain these careers. For what it's worth, it's the birth of the mirth.
Okay, so the birth of the mirth there.
I love that jingle.
I love that jingle.
It's so good. I can remember where I was when I wrote that jingle.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, I was in my lounge.
Right, so nowhere
well,
really
about
very
a fortnight
interesting.
Ago. Okay.
What I like about that jingle is that mirth rhymes with birth.
Yeah, it's very clever, isn't it, Craig?
It is.
Bit of wordplay. Yeah.
So, Stuart.
Yes, go on.
What show are we going to do tonight?
Well, we are going to look at... Yep. One Man and His Cow.
One Man. This is a special request from the amazing Kerry Bartlett at Arts Reach, who's asked for this one. And we thought we'd... we've done two sort of, in some ways, similar shows.
Yep.
Henry and Adolf and Winston, both sort of history-based. So we thought this was slightly different. So we thought we'd do this and also it gives us a chance to say a big hello to Kerry.
Yeah, and Kerry works for a company called Arts Reach, which is a rural touring company we've worked with quite a lot. They're based in Dorset. And she says, having spent a week on the road accompanying you on the pub tour of One Man and His Cow, I'm fairly certain I can still sing Spotted Judy on demand and could step in as a dep when needed.
Right. Well, we may take you up on that, Kerry.
We might. Yeah.
So, the origins of One Man and His Cow.
Yes, the birth of the mirth. How did it all kick off, Howard?
Well, we'd done this show that we've talked about a couple of times, which was Insider Story, which we hadn't written, and we hadn't written the music, and the Theatre Orchard basically asked us to do it again, and we were keen to kind of strike out at that time and do our own stuff. So we said, well, no, basically, we're not going to do it again. Yeah. But we're happy to write another similar show. And that show was for pubs, wasn't it?
There were lots of pubs closing down. So what they had was they had a chunk of money, I think, from the Arts Council to put some live theatre in pubs in an effort to kind of keep the doors open and get more punters in. That's when they called on us.
Yeah, and we'd Insider Story was a story that was kind of specially written, but we quite like adapting existing stories because you can kind of do your own spin, and people have got a certain expectation of what it should be, and you can like subvert that in hopefully a comic way.
Yes.
So we thought, well, no, we won't do our own story. We'll do a sort of adult version of some kind of folk tale. So
yes.
So we set to thinking, well, what can we do? And I remember walking down the road and thinking, right, I know what we'll do. We'll do the Three Little Pigs, and we'll do it where there's where they're builders. They're not pigs. They make it a bit different.
Yeah.
And so we were very pleased with this idea.
It's such a good idea that we returned to it some years later and actually did that show, didn't we? The Fabulous Bacon Boys, which I'm sure we'll touch on another episode of this podcast later on down the line.
Yes.
But the plan was scuppered, wasn't it, Howard, because of...
It was. So Theatre Orchard at the time, who we were working with to make this show, had a relationship with Yeo Valley, the yoghurt people, who are very close to where we live, just about 20 minutes away, and they're a big, obviously, employer and stuff in this area, and they were up for putting some money into a show, so we went and had a meeting with them, and we said, we're thinking about doing a show, and you know it's going to be in rhyme, and we're going to take it to the pubs, and we'd like a sponsor, and they basically said, "Can it have a cow in it?" to go with the, and we, true to our beliefs and not ever compromising artistically, we said to them, "Yeah, it can have a cow in it. We'll do a show about a cow.
If you give us money, it can have whatever you want in it."
Yeah, exactly.
So that's how it happened.
Yeah. Oh, hello. Oh, what's that?
You got a text. The famous text
that we get.
Oh, but this time it's Craig.
Yeah.
Nice. Not me. I've turned mine off.
So Yeo Valley wanted this show. Now, they wanted it to have a cow in it. So what happened then, Howard, for you? Because I should just say to the listeners at this point that you are the sole writer of this show. So this was your sort of project from the beginning, wasn't it? So
Let's just backtrack on that, because that's not normal for us, is it? We normally... I mean, you'd very much been the lead writer on Henry, and to a slightly lesser extent on Adolf and Winston.
Yes.
But, you know, definitely you were the lead writer. And I was sort of kind of... I'd never really written before. I'd written some little bits and bobs, but nothing, you know, serious. Mm. But I was kind of keen to get into it, you know. And I remember we were sat in Coffee One, which is the coffee shop in Clevedon one day, and we were
so many of our stories start with we were sat in Coffee One in Clevedon.
And I remember you turned to me and you said, "I think you should write this one."
Oh yeah,
and because we had two things on the go, didn't we? We had Christmas Carol and they both needed to be written at the same time, or that year. So you said, "Well, I'll do Christmas Carol," and you said you should do One Man and His Cow. And whilst I was, kind of a bit terrified, because you kind of think, well, you know, I've got to take on a show of my own. But I also thought, well, this is an opportunity to really kind of get the writing going, you know.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, in a way, it's kind of paid off, because subsequently we've always sort of co-written shows, haven't we?
Absolutely, yeah. But you were thrown in at the deep end, weren't you? Because we knew from the beginning that One Man and His Cow was going to be written in rhyming couplets.
Yes.
Was that a challenge for you?
Well, it was, but it's turned out to be something that I really enjoy doing. I mean, it makes putting the comedy in it really easy, because you just put a stupid rhyme at the end of the line, and it gets a laugh. So that's good.
We've done it several times since, haven't we? And we really like writing rhymes. So yeah. It was, that was our first one.
That's right. Yeah. But back to your original point, which was how did it get going?
We were
going to do Three Little Pigs, which, as we've said, became Fabulous Bacon Boys at a later date. And so we knew that this story had to have a cow in it. So I basically did what everybody does, which is put folktale with a cow in it in Google. And there was one that came up, and it was an African folktale called, and it was called One Man and His Precious Cow. So I took the kind of basic story of that, which was with this farmer has a cow, and the cow sort of tricks. Well, in the original story, the cow is sort of has got no reason for being
malicious.
Malicious, that's right. Yeah. She just is a malicious cow, and basically slags off his three sons to him, and he sends them away, and that's the end of the story. So we took that as a basic thing. We sort of set it in the West Country because that's where we are, and cows. It sort of made sense. But I remember as I wrote it, I was thinking, well, I don't really know. I mean, why is the cow so horrible? You know, and it was actually Craig that came up, and I remember where we were when this.
Was it Coffee One in Cleveland?
It wasn't, but it was a coffee shop. Weirdly, in. It was in Langford. It was in where Yeo Valley are based. We'd just been for a meeting, and I'd had it was a second meeting about this thing, and I'd said to I fancy doing the show, but I said, you know, I can't work out why the cow is so malicious, and Craig just said, like as he does, he said, well, it's obvious. I'm doing the impression. The cow wants to inherit the farm. So that was
Craig. Idea was it?
It was Craig's idea, and we were in a little coffee shop in Langford when you said that, and that was it. That just set me on the road because that made perfect sense. It was all about the cow trying to inherit the farm.
And then we started talking about it as being just basically King Lear, but with a cow.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
I suppose so. He's got three. He's got some children. They want to inherit the land, and some other malicious creature gets in the way. I guess it has lots of resonances, doesn't it, with that kind of Shakespearean structure.
Yeah, and I remember you. Where were you? You went.
I was in Salisbury.
That's right. You went off to do a show, and I didn't have a job that Christmas. That was the only Christmas I think I haven't worked for years.
That's right. Yeah.
But it was brilliant because I had this writing job. So I sat down, and I suppose it took me about a month to write. I sort of 3 or 4 hours a day in the mornings. I'd just sit down and I'd write me rhyming couplets, and if I managed 500-600 words a day, I was really happy. And that's how it happened, really. There's some great problems in it, like how does the cow inherit a farm and all that kind of stuff, and the sort of legal stuff about it. And we sort of tried to solve that a little bit. And it's great when you kind of set yourself problems and you have to sort of write your way out of a corner, which is always fun.
So, did you miss having the opportunity to? Because when we write together, we often kind of have ideas and bounce them off each other and kind of gauge out whether it's worth pursuing. And sometimes if we're really excited about an idea, we kind of, our enthusiasm kind of bounces off each other, and before we know it, we've written the scene, it's written itself. Did you miss that kind of process when you're writing it by yourself?
I think I would if I'd been writing scenes, non-rhyming scenes, but there's something about writing rhymes which actually doesn't lend itself to working with somebody else.
When we've done
it in the past, actually, when we've done it at a later date, we actually wrote rhyming shows separately, didn't we?
We
set ourselves scenes and then
we break it into
because
chunks.
So much of with writing rhyme, it's so much about just sitting there and kind of going, what's the rhyme for that? How can I rhyme that?
Experienced something similar when we did Swan Lake, which we did recently, which was again all in rhymes. And I remember there were a few times when a couple of the things we'd written didn't quite work or weren't quite right, and we had to write in the room. It's always funny because we had Craig, myself and Howard, and Josh and Fran, our two amazing dancers, and we were all trying to find a rhyme for I think, and it was like loads of silence, and then someone goes, "Bye?" You go, "Yeah, but what? But why?" You're right. Yeah, try.
Yeah.
And I think it's quite frustrating for you, Craig, isn't it, when we do that? Because you sort of go, "Oh, I wish they'd bloody done this before I got in the room."
But have we explained why? Because Inside a Story was all in rhyming couplets.
It was.
And because it was written by other people, because normally when we rehearse a show, a script, there are cuts to be made and changes to be made. And because that was in rhyming couplets and it was written by other people and we couldn't contact them in rehearsal, we made those cuts and we made those alterations ourselves. And, and because it was in rhyming couplets, you guys had to sort those problems out for yourself. And I think I think for you, possibly, Howard, more than Stu, it was like, oh, this is really interesting. I'm really enjoying this.
Yeah.
This solving the problem of the rhyming couplets.
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
Mm. And I think for you, you got the bug then of like, oh, yeah, I really like doing this.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think that's definitely true. Yeah, I kind of... it was great not having the... I mean, with the greatest respect to Stu, you know, obviously when we rehearse some... Up to that point, when we'd rehearse something that he'd written... In the end, you know, as a writer, you would get kind of final say, almost, wouldn't you?
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas I think at the beginning, that was much more what it was like. I mean, it's, I don't think it's like that anymore, but at the beginning, that was definitely true. But it's but yeah, because the writer was in writers weren't in the room, we were kind of going, nah, get rid of that. Oh, that doesn't work. Just change it, you know, which was a kind of a real luxury. Yeah.
But yeah, you were able to do it all yourself this time. So you felt like you didn't have anyone breathing down your neck.
Absolutely. Did I miss sort of bouncing ideas? And I mean, you were on the end of a phone, I think.
I
didn't write the whole script and say, there you go then. You know, every now and again, every week or so, I'd send you what I'd done so far and you'd read it and you'd laugh and you'd say, yeah, that's great.
And I stuck a couple of songs in, didn't I?
You wrote I wanted you to write the songs. So I said, well, did you write all the songs? I think you did for that.
I mean, I know that we wrote the first one, the Now We're Here in Your Local Pub. We wrote that together.
That's
because you said, I really want this one to have a lot of syllables and be like bullet out of a gun. Yeah. So we did this kind of ba-da-ba-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da sort of song. And we did that one together. I remember we were in your, I think it was in your spare room.
And I think
room,
we wrote Cow Abuse together
yes,
as well.
We wrote
well,
Cow
didn't
Abuse
we?
Together as well.
But I certainly like wrote a song about this at this point. And you were learning your concertina, weren't you?
That's
at the
true.
Time.
Yeah, I'd picked up the English concertina, so I was learning that at the time. Yeah.
Yeah, so you wrote some songs for that, didn't you?
I did.
You?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's how that happened.
And I remember being sat in my digs in Salisbury, which was just a kind of an annex on an old lady's house at the bottom of her garden. And it was freezing cold. I remember that. And I got up and you'd sent me the email of your first draft. And I just sat there and laughed my head off the whole morning. Oh, it was so brilliant because Judy... Well, yeah, let's talk about Judy the cow. She's quite a piece of work, isn't she?
Yeah, there was just great fun to be had with the idea of a kind of malevolent cow. Because, I mean, you know, cows have a certain... Like they're so kind of understated, aren't they, cows? But they also something behind their eyes has got a sort of malevolence. They're scary
they
as
are.
Well as being
in
really
fact,
kind
I
of.
I remember when we went for a kind of publicity shoot in a field. Do you remember this? They drove.
Oh
us,
yeah, I remember.
Do you remember that Craig?
Oh
they
yeah.
drove us to a field. And there were some cows, and they went, right, just hop out, and if you can stand in the field with your instruments, and so we did. And they went, yeah, can you just get a bit closer to the cows? That's it, yeah. And then the cows noticed us.
Yeah.
And they started to walk over to us as we were playing this song. And they did not look happy.
They did not, no. Right. And I've been rushed by cows in the past, and it's
Have
not
you?
A pleasant experience
no,
at all.
No, I prefer to take my time with cows.
Brilliant.
Hang on. Put them on. So, always thinking.
What do we get to?
Judy.
Judy. Yes.
So we made this kind of malevolent cow who could talk, and that was another.
Yeah.
That was we. She had to be able to talk. Mm-hmm. She tells our hero. I can't even remember his name. What's
Trevor.
His name? Trevor. That's it.
That's it.
Weirdly, he had a daughter called Mo, and my aunt and uncle are called Mo and Trevor, and I didn't realise that until long after we'd written.
You just did it subconsciously. That's very strange. Yeah.
She had to be able to talk. So there was a whole kind of thing about that and how he found out she could talk, and she was obviously really intelligent and and manipulative. And that was great fun to do, you know, because you've got this kind of and then when you started doing it and the voice that you did and the I mean it was, I think it's my favourite character that you've ever done is Judy. It was just brilliant to watch something that you've written, and then like I'd never had this experience before of an actor like add so much to it, you know, with their performance, and that's sort of dream, isn't it? As a writer for theatre, that's what you hope for, you know.
Yeah, it was. She's a brilliant. I just remember reading it and her just kind of coming to life, really. Mm. I mean, there was no trying. I could just see, I think because we know each other so well, I could see what you were achieving with your writing. And I thought, well, I'll just take it to the nth degree, really.
Yeah.
And that's what I did. But yeah, what do you remember about rehearsals? Craig, how do you recall?
We haven't let Craig speak at all yet. Sorry, Craig, tell us about rehearsals.
Oh, I honestly can't remember where we rehearsed this.
Brilliant.
Oh, I do.
Yeah, me too.
We were in the back room of the Prince's Hall because they didn't have any room in the main Prince's Hall in Clevedon. Oh. And we were in their back room. There's a tiny little room at the back.
Of course, our first two shows we rehearsed in Bristol.
Yes, we
did. This is before we got the shop and we had a proper rehearsal space.
That's right, yeah.
So we were just, in other people's rehearsal rooms. So it was a small room, wasn't it?
Tiny room.
Which was good because we knew we were going out to pubs where the playing area was going to be so small that we just thought we're going to make it in a really small space as well.
And so what? Tell us, because to be honest, I'd like to know this. When you start directing a show, what do you... And if you want to use this show as an example, maybe. I mean, we have this joke, don't we, that you don't read the script. Now, obviously, you do read the script.
I do.
But I know scripts aren't a kind of... They're not the be-all and end-all for you, are they?
No. What I do, I read a script, and because, as you know, I'm quite a visual person, so I tend to look for the visual kind of comedy, the non-verbal stuff. So when I'm reading a script, I immediately get pictures in my head,
right,
of what the shapes on stage are, and what you two are doing on stage, and what pictures you're making in a scene. So once I've read a script through once, I've kind of got those pictures in my head, and I'm not really worried about what you've said.
Right.
I'm more concerned with what it looks like and what the audience are looking at rather than what they're hearing.
Right.
Because a lot of storytelling is non-verbal. And what a character is feeling and what a character is kind of thinking and what they're saying is quite visual sometimes, more so than what they're saying. Mm-hmm. So that's why when we are rehearsing and I go, so what happens next in the scene? Who's got the next line? It's because I haven't really taken any notice of what is being said. It's more about what the pictures are. So yeah, that's my first thing is I think of all the pictures.
And so what was with One Man and His Cow? What was the what was your first thoughts there?
I remember thinking, how are we going to do the milking machine?
Oh, the milking machine. Yeah, of course.
The milking machine scene. There's a scene where he hooks his cow up to the kind of, because he's a dairy farmer and he's got this cow and he's milking her and then the milking machine goes a bit awry, doesn't it? It goes a bit mad. Yeah. And that's when the cow speaks and goes, get me out of this, it's going to explode. And that's when he discovers his cow can speak. So I was thinking, how the hell are we going to do that? And I guess I don't really worry about that until we go, right, well, we'll think of something. And in the end, it was just you standing on a box, wasn't it?
Playing the concertina.
Playing the concertina and kind of gyrating your hips.
That's right, yeah. I did a lot of gyrating of hips in that show, didn't I?
Yeah. Yeah. Because you know me, I don't go, well, we don't need a milking machine. We'll just say, here's a milking machine. And the audience go, all right, yeah, I can see one in my imagination.
Yeah, and that's always the most interesting thing in theatre, isn't it? You know, being able to make those things in one's own mind, if you like.
But also, not all pretentious.
But also going, but it also means that you as the actor, Stu, have to go, okay, so that means I've got to do something really ridiculous now to kind of sell the idea of that there's a milking machine.
Well, I love all that because I'm such a tart. So if I get the chance to do something really ridiculous I know is going to make people laugh, I always do it.
Yeah, because it's much funnier seeing an actor in the shit than actually wheeling out a massive milking machine and going, well, here you are, here's a milking machine.
And that's one of the things I really love about you, Craig, as a director, is that Howard and I sweat over these scripts and we try and get all the words really funny. We cram it with as many jokes as we can. And then you come along and you put this kind of sheen of humour over the top where we do these things like just stop and gyrate the hips and play a really dissonant chord on the concertina.
Although, I think it's important that we put this in the public domain. This is something we've always joke about in rehearsals, which is when we first did the dream sequence in The Six Wives of Henry VIII. And, and Craig didn't know what to do, basically, for this dream sequence.
It was my first idea, Howard.
It's fine. But we weren't confident enough to say, no way, we're not doing that. Yeah. And he said, let's do the scene with you just waving your arms about. And we did it. We stood there and did the whole scene waving our arms in the air because Craig couldn't think of anything better to do.
And then he watched us do it and we looked at him expectantly and he went, nah, didn't work. Didn't work. Go back to what you were doing before. All right, but now it's become a running joke. Every time we're in rehearsals and he can't think of something to do, we just wave our arms in the air. And it helps to break the tension, listeners.
Yeah, yeah. There'll be a show when we get that in.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a scene where you're both falling down a well.
Yes. Okay.
We'll write that into a future show and we'll do it with the wavy arms.
And in terms of... So we tend not to work with a designer, only in certain circumstances. And so you become our sort of de facto designer, don't you, Craig? And so in terms of visual look of things, One Man and His Cow, what was the thoughts there?
Well, the biggest problem we had was, like, how are we going to do the cow? And, I mean, I know Stu was playing the cow, and we went, OK, well, when Stu's the cow, he's going to have this balaclava on, which Fiona Trim knitted, didn't she? Because it was the first show we'd done with Fiona Trim.
That's right. Yes. Fiona Trim, for the benefit of the listeners, is now our long-term kind of stage manager, technical manager... designer when we need her to be.
Yeah, basically everything else. She's our sort of line producer as well. I mean, we've got she's the person that we sort of runs the company, really. Yeah. I suppose certainly financially.
We came to a point in rehearsals where we said, "Well, why don't we have a headdress for Stu?" And she just went, "Oh, I can do that. I'll just knit you a balaclava. I've got a cow balaclava headdress pattern at home."
Yeah.
And we went,
that's
have
the sort
you?
Of person we're talking about here.
Yeah. You've just got one at home. Yeah, I've got one at home. So she just knitted one, didn't she?
She came in with this ridiculous balaclava it was black and white, and it had ears and sort of beige horns coming out of the top. And every time I was Judy, I'd quickly pop it on.
And then we had other scenes where then Stu would play the children, the two sons and the daughter, where they would have to look after the cow for the day. And we thought, what are we going to do there? And we just said, well, let's just get a plastic cow from the tool shop. I mean, not like a big one, just like a little one.
It wasn't from the toy shop, Craig. You stole it from your son.
Yeah, it was Billy's.
Oh, we had some farm animals, didn't we, at home?
That's right.
Yeah.
Oh, we brought in about six. I think we had about six cows and we auditioned them.
That's right. We said, well, we'll let you know. We got some other cows to see. We'll be in touch.
Speak to your agent.
It's been really lovely meeting you.
Yeah. Yeah. We got some other candidates.
Get out. I know you're in your own home and you can't go out, but get out.
It's the law now. I have to stay in, so you have to put up with my
jokes. One of them really milked the scene when she did it.
Right, no, I'm going to stop this right now because this is getting... it was all a bit cheesy.
No. Anyway.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Anyway, so we had a little...
That's the thing about Yo Valley. They were quite keen to support culture. It's a yogurt joke.
I thought, whatever he says, I'm going to just be quiet at the end of this. Brilliant. Just making him really bad about it.
What you can't see at home, viewers, is the look on Howard's face when he made that joke. It was like, I've said something really clever.
And he just waited with his eyebrows raised for us to respond.
So we had this little plastic cow. And I think my favourite part of the show... Well, there's two bits of the show that are my favourite. There's one where I think it's Dickin looks after the cow for the day, Judy, and gives her a massage.
Yes, right, yeah.
So Howard, no, Stu, sorry, was massaging a little plastic cow at one point. And then there's another scene where in the story, Judy the cow has basically jumped on top of Trevor, the farmer, and is pinning him to the ground with her hooves. So Howard had to stand there with a little plastic cow on his on his head.
Yes, because at which point all three of his children burst in to break up the scene. So we got all four of the characters I'm playing on stage at the same time, which was a challenge, wasn't it?
But that was written for that reason. Yeah. You know, give yourself a problem. I just remember, the only thing I remember about that plastic cow was that there was a very, at the end of every little scene with the things, I had to remember to give the cow, what was it? I had to pick.
You held the cow and we sang Spotted Judy.
That's right. Yeah.
During the song, you handed the cow across to me. Yeah. But you frequently forgot to do so.
Frequently? Not just frequently, literally every time I'd forget to do it.
So you'd need to leave the stage and you'd be holding this cow. So I'd just take it off you and you'd run off stage. Oh, that was brilliant. Oh, dear.
And we should talk about the Spotted Judy song, because that song, we were doing Henry, and we were in, where were we? Wooden Fitzpaine or something.
That's right,
And we started singing this song, and I'm not going to go into the lyrics to the song, because it's so complicated, but we basically started singing this song, which was about a friend of ours, and I really liked it. And so when I was writing One Man and His Cow, I thought, well, I'll just put some words to that song. Then I haven't got to write a song. So that ended up being the Spotted Judy song.
It did.
Which was one of the hits of the
it
show.
Certainly
was.
It certainly was. Talking of songs, why don't we play a song from the show at this point? What should we have?
I would like Friends Forever. I love Friends Forever.
I love it. There's some lovely harmonies in Friends Forever. And there was a really great dance routine in that, I remember.
It was a dance routine. Okay, yeah. Friends Forever it is. Let's hear it. Domesticated ungulate. I never thought a nice human friend would come along. No, no. However, Trevor came and showed me I was wrong. In the sunshine, man and bovine, and it seems to work. It seems to work. So come on, Judy, put your hoof in my hand. The rest of the world will never understand that interspecies friendships can be so flipping great. And she's my new best mate.
Oh, Trevor.
And I think Trevor's great.
Oh, stop it.
No, I do.
Come on, let's sing another chorus.
In the sunshine, man and bovine, friends forever, Judy and Trevor, friends forever. Trevor, yeah. So there we go. That was Friends Forever from One Man and His Cow.
Okay, so we took this little show out on tour, didn't we?
We did it in pubs.
We did, yes. How do we feel about that?
Well, I've got to say, it was a mixed bag. I mean, there were some nights where it was brilliant,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Yeah.
And there were some nights when you just wanted the ground to open up and swallow you whole.
Well, explain the setup, though, of what it was, because they weren't a paying audience, were they?
No. So they were just punters in a pub, right? So the idea is we turn up, we get ourselves set up in a corner. When I say set up, I mean we've got a guitar and a ukulele on a stand and a double bass and a chest, a wooden chest full of props and things that also acts as a kind of level for us to sit on. It's basically the set of the show.
Yeah.
And we'd rock up at a pub and we'd go, we're here for the show. And they go, oh, yeah, yeah, brilliant. Well, you're over there in the corner. That was sometimes the response.
Occasionally the response was, what? Oh, I don't know anything about that, mate.
What show? Oh, really? Oh, when did we say yes to that? So there were a few of those. But predominantly it was, yeah, great, we're looking forward to it. Got people coming down, fantastic. There you go in the corner. So we'd go and set ourselves up in the corner. We'd have a little bite to eat and then we'd be on. And it was whoever was in the pub at that time would just stop drinking and either look at us or roll their eyes and try to go back to the conversations.
Yeah, and occasionally people came because we were on. I would say less often than when people didn't know anything about it and they just turned up because they were going to the pub. That was hard sometimes, wasn't it? Because, you know, people, you're invading their space, and pubs are, the regulars very much feel like it's their space, and quite rightly
they
so.
Do.
And then two idiots turn up doing a show about a cow, and they're going, well, this is my drinking time, you know, and I don't blame them. That's like a load of drinkers coming into the middle of a theatre performance, isn't it?
Absolutely. And we had a few in a pub, in a local pub especially, there's normally one bloke who's like the pub joker, right? And they've kind of cast themselves in this role of the pub joker. I make the jokes. Everyone thinks I'm the funny one, you know, who comes into this pub. Now, when we turned up, often that person was there and, well, exhibited behaviour which would lead us to believe that they were threatened by us coming on and doing some jokes and some fun songs and things. So often would start a fairly passive-aggressive conversation with us while we were setting up and would be a general nuisance throughout the evening. That was sometimes difficult to handle, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it was. I don't think, was it this show or was it?
It was Tortoise
the Hare.
Tortoise the Hare.
There was a guy that he was able
to
get.
Was that Norfolk?
Yeah, it was a pub where he could get behind us for some reason.
That's right.
Weird geography of the pub, and he came in and he started to basically take the mickey out of us from behind our backs for the audience.
So suddenly the very meagre audience began to laugh and we thought, oh, we must be doing something right. Yeah. Suddenly they're with us, but no, it was the bloke behind us.
Yeah, and we were, shall we say, less than best pleased about it, weren't we?
We were less than best pleased.
I think we need
to
release
a side of you, Howard, that I've never seen before or since. I would say it was a mixed bag, wasn't it, performing in pubs?
It was.
Sometimes, I've got to say, we've given a bit of a damning review of what it was like, but actually, there were times when it was brilliant, especially we loved the Arts Reach tour in Dorset.
Yeah, amazing. That was
brilliant. That was
amazing.
So good.
Do you remember that Stourpane when we...
Stourpane
was
such a great gig.
It was absolutely packed, and what was great about that, I think we did four nights in a row, and it just sort of gradually built, you know, which was fantastic. And we also did theatre with it as well, didn't we? We did some.
Yeah, we did some.
Yeah.
And there's something really special about being in a pub performing to people, and they don't have to be there. They haven't bought a ticket.
No.
They're not losing out on anything by walking out, but they stay and they stay with you and they laugh along. Mm. And at the end of the show, they come and say that was brilliant, and that means so much, especially when there's nothing holding them there to you know, stay and watch it, but they genuinely seem to enjoy it, and that was very, very special.
Yeah, absolutely. So we went all over the place with this. We did it 2 years running, didn't we? And then we brought it back. We did a couple of years ago, we did all three of our rhyming shows, more of which later.
That's right.
And we did them in rep. So we were doing one night we were doing One Man and His Cow, and then the next night we were doing Tortoise versus Hare, which was a bit of a especially they were all in rhyming couplets.
They all
are sort of similar sort of form as well. So
yes.
So it was kind of, which one is it tonight? Yeah, that was interesting.
It was.
So I've got dear on this running order. Any horror stories? Stroke the favourite pub gigs. I think we've got some corkers, haven't we?
Oh yeah, I've got some. I I've got some great ones. So I'd like to start with the Railway Tavern in Yatton. Okay, so what happened was we're setting up for the show and we got, like, as I mentioned before, we got this chest, the wooden chest, and all the props are stored in. So when we're setting the show up, sometimes the chest is open and sometimes the chest is closed. Now, Howard's mum was there. I remember that. Do you remember your mum was there? I do, yeah. And so... And Howard, I think you had a few friends there too, maybe. You were talking to the audience anyway.
I'd sat on it. I'd sat on the top of the box. In my defence, I thought we'd got everything out of the box.
And you stood up and you went to speak to some punters and your mum, during which time I opened the case, the crate, and I got something out. And you went, yeah. No, I was just saying that to him the other day. And you sat down on what you thought was the crate, but you fell straight into the... And I mean, I've never seen someone fall straight into a box. And it was empty. We'd got all the props out. He just fell straight in. Like, you couldn't even see your legs. You were just in that box. And we had to lift you out. But your mum, bless her, she thought you were injured and she rushed to your aid. And she was in ever such a flat.
Yeah.
Wasn't she, trying to get you out? And I could not stop laughing. And you were going, yeah, all right, it's not funny. But 20 minutes later, you were going, yeah, okay. It was funny at the time. And I was just, I couldn't control my laughter. It was ridiculous. So that was one of my highlights. Yeah.
I've got York here. So
York.
So my little sister came to see the show in York. I don't know what... She was working in she was at college I think in Warrington or something.
That's right.
And and she came to York to see a show with her boyfriend at the time. And they were literally the only members of the audience, weren't they?
Yeah.
Well, no, the landlord watched for a bit as well.
The landlord took pity on us and thought, "Well, I'll stay and watch this show." We were in this back room of a pub, so it was a big long hall, wasn't it? And it was. We were there doing the show, and there was the landlord and Meggie and her boyfriend.
Yeah.
And that was it.
But the story does have a happy ending, Stu, doesn't it?
It does.
So explain.
Well, reader, I married her.
Yes.
As you might see in Jane Eyre, because that Meggie is now my wife. She's not obviously got that boyfriend anymore. Be a bit weird if she hadn't broken up with him.
No,
yet.
She has.
Yeah. Oh, dear. I didn't realise I was in a polygamous relationship. So actually, we're now married. So it's all worked out quite well for me. Yeah. Now, I don't think that pub gig in York was what sealed the deal, but you never know, do you? Craig, have you got any that you remember?
Oh, I came to see you in. Remember doing the show in that tent?
That was a low point.
It really was.
We were in a tent in the middle of Queen Square in Bristol, and it was like a sort of. There was a massive bar in there. And you guys came in, and Jen, because I've performed in tents, and usually the acoustics in a tent are rubbish anyway.
Yeah.
But you guys set up, and then just as you're about to start the show, this massive party of people came in who were like just finished work, and they just wanted to go to the bar, and there was a bar right next to where you were performing, and they just took absolutely no notice of you guys and made quite a lot of noise. And I remember sitting there on the front row, and it was me, and it was Katie, my partner, and Stuart Wright, who was an actor.
And Celia was there as
well.
Celia,
who knew you. We were sat there, and you were just dying on your feet.
Because
nobody could hear anything. And you two were just going, I could just see a pair of you just going, let's just stop the show.
Yeah.
Let's just stop the show. And neither of you did. You kind of carried on.
Well,
didn't
we were being, unfortunately, Craig, we get paid to do it.
I know. I know, Howard. And some of that money goes to me.
Yeah,
so I was really, really glad that you carried on.
We were thinking of you, Craig.
Yeah.
We thought, you know, we could stop because I don't need the money. Poor old Craig sat at home, wringing his hands. He needs it. So,
I need that money. I really felt for you that on that day.
Oh, that was a terrible gig. Yeah. Do you remember the one at Sturminster
Newton?
So Sturminster Newton, I don't know if anyone listening is from Sturminster Newton, but it's one of our favourite places to go, the Exchange.
It's
at Sturminster Newton.
So,
it's brilliant. It's a huge big stage, and because they're kind of friends of ours and we've performed there since time immemorial.
About 2013.
We decided we'd bring this show, which is just a little pub show, onto this huge stage and do a show there. It's not a big show to set up, is it? It's not complicated.
No,
so
not at
we'd
all.
Set it up.
Took us about 10 minutes.
10 minutes, yeah. And we had a couple of hours to kill. So I said, well, that base is looking a bit dusty under the lights, so what I'll do is I'll get some Mr. Sheen out.
Yeah.
And I gave it a little polish.
The floor of the stage is a polished wooden floor.
You can probably see where this is going. So I polished the base, and it looked pristine, didn't it? It looked beautiful.
It really did, yeah.
We were very proud of it, and we went on to do the show. Now, as part of the setting of the show, the double bass and the guitar stand we mentioned before, they act as kind of markers for either end of the stage. So when you go off stage, you walk around the double bass and back on, and you sort of, in effect, it's like a screen wipe. You kind of go off stage and you're off. So there were several points where Howard had to angrily storm off after having an argument with one of his children, played by me. And I remember him doing the line, "I never want to see your stupid face again," he said. And he stormed off and he slipped on the floor.
It was like an ice rink.
It was like an ice rink, exactly. And in order to stop from fully stacking it on the floor, he grabbed hold of the nearest thing he could, which was the double bass, which began to teeter slowly towards the audience, at which point everyone went, ooh, like that. And I rushed in and grabbed both Howard and the double bass and almost fell over myself. And we just ended up in a pile on the floor of bodies and basses.
Best round we've ever got.
It was a lot of fun, wasn't it?
Yes, yeah. And then so every time we went off that way, we'd kind of very ostentatiously, gingerly walk around it, and it was very funny.
What else? I remember the Marine Theatre Bar, Lyme Regis.
Oh, my word.
That was the hottest gig of all time.
Well, this was a summer show, wasn't it? And you were wearing a woolen balaclava, and I had, kind of quite hot. It was all hot clothes. It was,
wellies as well.
Wellies and a hat and, all that kind of stuff. And we were playing the bar at the Marine Theatre, which is a lovely theatre down in Lyme Regis. And we're playing in the bar, and it must have been like 28, 29 degrees, and we were trying to do this show. Yeah. And I remember nearly passing out, actually.
Yeah.
I had a moment.
But we got through it. We survived, didn't we?
Yeah.
And like you said last week, we weren't going down a mine.
No,
we're just
exactly.
mucking about, aren't we?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Okay, well, there we go. One man and his cow.
Yeah,
It's the only show, can I say this? It's the only show where I didn't have a hand in the design of the poster.
Is that
That's
right?
True.
How did that come about?
Well, I think I was away doing a show somewhere else.
Right.
And I think it had all been done, and I came to rehearsals, and you go, oh, this is the poster, and I went, oh, right, okay.
Yeah, and subsequently, I don't know if you've seen you might have seen the poster, listeners, but it isn't as good as the other posters, I've got to say. I don't think so.
Well, I think the concept...
It's a different style, that's all.
Yeah, yeah,
Whoever did the poster did a perfectly good job. But it's,
We missed Craig's style, I think. Yeah, we needed you. Why did you desert us in our hour of
need? I don't know where I was. Well, I must have been away doing something.
Back in that day, in those days, we were all kind of doing our own separate things. We weren't doing Living Spit full time, were we? So I think we were all off doing other things.
Yeah, because we didn't really think it was going to last.
Nah.
No.
We were just waiting for someone to tell us we had to stop.
Yeah, please stop doing this show.
And they still haven't.
No, we're encouraged to carry on. So, what can we say? All right, I think it's time to go to some audience questions.
Another some audience questions.
There's the jingle.
We got a jingle, have we?
Yeah, we got the jingle for the audience questions.
I haven't heard that.
Well, you should tune in to this podcast and you'll...
Well, I'm not going to listen to it. I'm not going to listen to it.
No, why not?
I was in it. Well, I was in it.
Don't you watch, The Bill when you've been cab driver one?
Yeah, I do, actually. Yeah. But, I mean, this is quite a big commitment, isn't it? An hour.
It is an hour.
You
can listen to it when you walk the dog or someone...
Do you listen to it?
I've listened to it, yeah. But I listen to it because I spend the time editing it first. So then I give it a couple of days because... I think, I never want to hear that again.
Yeah.
Right. And then I go, I'll have a listen. See
but
what
some
like.
People listen to podcasts like in order to go to sleep, don't they? So they
That's
only
true.
Really hear the first kind of 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And then
that
they're
is
asleep.
Very true. Yes. Yeah.
I'll be honest, there's one or two people that I hope only hear the first 15 minutes.
there's one listener who said, it was Phil Windy, in fact, said...
Phil Windy.
Yeah, he said, thanks, guys, loving the podcast. Perfect listening when I'm off doing my run around Clevedon.
There we are. So we got some audience questions now. So there's a couple actually specifically for Craig. Laura Caroline Denton on Facebook says...
Yeah. Hi, Laura.
For Craig, how do you put up with Howard and Stu?
She then follows it up with, I love you, please don't be mad.
Well, we love you too, Laura. We don't take it personally.
Oh, no, I think she's probably saying to me that she loves me, I think.
Well,
right.
Is she?
She doesn't know you, though, does she?
No.
Oh, that's true.
Mm. Yeah.
Maybe she just loves me from afar.
From a farm?
Ask, Aunt, why don't you answer the question that she's very kindly...
Get on with the question.
How do I put up with Howard and Stew?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good question.
Is it?
I don't know. Well... I guess the question is, how do they put up with me?
No, she specifically asked you,
know,
Craig, how
I
you
know,
put up with us,
I
so you've got to go for it.
I think it's... yeah, it's a tough one, that. Because we... I think I just go, well, if they didn't employ me, no one else would. So I've just got to be nice to them.
Yeah.
Oh,
no.
Dear.
That's and I think all three of us are in that boat. I think we all look at each other and go, well, if these guys don't put up with me, who else is going to put up with me? So I think it is a fair point. So I think because of that, that bonds us as a kind of threesome, in a kind of mutual love.
And people talk about like families, but it really does feel like a sort of family, does it? We do have a kind of familial relationship in a way. Yeah. You know, we know each other so well, and we know what each other's things are, and we know that what our strengths and weaknesses are. We know what pushes each other's buttons, and you know those can be either avoided or
pushed,
exploited. Yeah, depending on how we want to. So it is a bit like that, really. It's like saying, how do you put up with your husband or wife? You know, you just sort of do because that's who you're with, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I have to say, I don't really have to put up with you in any sense.
Aww.
I think what is lovely about working with you two is that I can just ask you to do anything and pretty much you can do anything.
Right.
Oh, that's sweet, isn't it?
Unless you say, no, I can't do that, Craig. And I go, okay, and that's fine.
Conversely, often that's a bit of a frustration for us because we're especially in rehearsals, well, for me anyway, you know, that you'll say, I'll be trying to remember the lines and trying to remember the song, and I'm trying to remember the words of the song, and I'm trying to remember where I need to go, and then you'll say, well, can you just do that as well? You know, like stick a broom up your ass and sweep the floor.
Yeah.
You know,
could you underscore that with some
yes, that's
with
a classic
guitar.
Yeah, can you just play a guitar and a ukulele and dance at the same time? yes.
Yeah.
That's why we always try and say yes to you, but it's difficult sometimes.
Yeah.
When I say, I think this scene needs a dance routine, and then I can see Howard's little face.
I know. I don't really do dancing.
You're great at dancing.
I know.
You have danced in all 16 of our shows.
I know,
I
know, but I derive no pleasure from it.
Right.
Oh, you do.
But, Howard, you give the audience pleasure, and that's what counts.
I can't argue with that, Stuart. I can't argue with that.
No. Anyway, next question.
Next question.
Okay, the next question is, we've heard Howard and Stu's impressions of you, Craig.
Yeah.
But how good are Craig's impressions of Howard and Stu?
Well, I think my impressions of Howard and Stu are more visual, so they don't really work in a podcast situation.
Well, we could describe what you're doing.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm going to do an impression of Howard now, right?
Okay.
Right. Brilliant.
Oh, my God. For the benefit of the listener, he's puffed his cheeks out in a kind of fat man sort of character and sort of wibbled about a bit like a jelly.
Yeah? Okay, this is my impression of Stew now, okay?
Okay, go on in. Right. He's taken...
yeah. Now he's pulled his ears out as far as he can, and he's sort of doing a weird thing with his eyes.
I've never seen you do that.
No. Kind of...
I get the ear thing, but what's that eye thing about, Craig?
That's what your eyes do.
Is it?
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah. Right. You do a funny eye thing when you're acting.
So the answer to your question, Mr. Naylor, is they're not very good.
Yeah. Have we got any other questions, Stuart?
So, Mary Underwood has been back in touch.
Oh, yes.
Do you remember Mary from last week? She says, hi, Howard and Stu.
Hi, Mary.
Another joyful episode to listen to and brighten up our somewhat dreary days at the moment. Then, a few minutes later, she said, me again, accidentally clicked send when I thought it was return. Thanks for answering my previous question about potential reckless parenting on my part by exposing my kids to your entertaining shows and confirming that I am actually benefiting my children's wholesome education. And yes, a mention of their names would absolutely make their day.
Right, do it, Stu.
So they are Reuben. Hello, Reuben. He's 15.
Hi, Reuben.
And
15? There's 15. No way he would make this is making his day. He's very, very embarrassed about the whole thing.
I'm sure he is. And Leo, who's 12, he was 12 April Fool's Day, in fact, so happy birthday, Leo.
Happy birthday,
Leo.
They're looking forward to listening to the next episode. Stay well and safe in the meantime, please.
Oh, that's nice. Any others?
That's it. That's all the questions, I think.
Right.
Oh, well, thank God for that.
Well, so there we go. That's it, Craig. You're done. You're released. How was your experience on the Living Spit podcast?
Oh, it was great.
Great.
I loved it.
Did you?
Yeah.
Great. Well, very that's good. We will get you in again.
Well, only if it's not any bother.
No, it's not any bother.
Well,
we'd like to say very publicly thank you. And we recognise your talents in everything we do.
And Craig, we're never, ever going to stop making fun of you. Okay?
Okay. That's cool.
Great. We're just going into the last item of the show now. Now, I remember last week you saying, I'll prepare something next week. So I hope you've prepared something for this.
This is the bit I'm looking forward to the most.
Okay. Yeah? Oh, it's such a joy. Let's hear from Howard as he ends the show with Howard's End.
Howard's End is going to end the show for us. Howard's End.
Okay, over to you, Howard, for Howard's End.
So, I think we can all learn something from one man and his cow, and that is... Don't be like Judy. Be kind. That's it.
Oh, my God. Oh. This is getting better every week.
It's the voice he puts on when he does it.
Thanks.
He gets really kind of Steve Wright-ish about it.
Oh,
no, I thought we might get through an episode without mentioning a 70s or 80s DJ from the BBC, but we haven't.
Never mind. Right, so just to wind up, please, if you feel like it, the GoFundMe is still running, so do chuck us some cash if you like. Don't worry if you don't.
Yeah.
Enjoy the thing. Enjoy our shows. That's the main
thing.
It's
not a requirement, but it is always welcome.
Yes, and we'd love hearing from you. So do go to our Twitter, Living Spit on Twitter and Living Spit on Facebook and Instagram as well, just send us your comments and questions for next week. We haven't decided yet what we're going to do. We record this on a Monday night, and we normally decide what we're going to do sort of on a Friday, something like that.
Yeah.
So give us a shout before then to let us know what you'd like to hear about next week on the Living Spit podcast, which we can safely say will happen. We need to have a think about whether we ever want any other ever special guests.
Yes,
probably not next week, I would say, but maybe another time we might have special guests.
It would be good to get Craig and Trimo involved at some point.
It would. Absolutely.
But we'll see. We'll see. And just a reminder before we go, I don't know if you want to talk about this, Craig, but you are appearing in the National Theatre's production of Jane Eyre, which is going to be streaming. When is it going to be streaming, Craig? When can we watch your performance in that show? Do you know?
I'm not sure. It's this week, isn't it?
I've got it written here if you haven't.
Okay,
I've done
you.
The preparation.
You're very kind.
It's going to be on this Thursday, the 9th of April, and it's streaming from 7 p.m. So if you want to see Craig, I've got to say, you were brilliant in that show, Craig.
Yes, you were. I mean, it's a long show.
It is a very long show.
Let's not. But you are brilliant.
And it's worth streaming just to see Craig in it. So
we should. Well, we haven't really explained that Craig's actually a brilliant, brilliant actor. And if you've been to the theatre in Bristol, you've almost certainly seen him in a show.
Yeah.
He looks a bit like like Bruce Ford. Bruce Ford. Great.
So there you go. Well, thank you, Craig, for coming on and
thank
being with
you,
us.
Craig.
It's been a pleasure.
And we'll speak to you all next week on the Living Spit podcast.
Yes, goodbye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
This is the Living Spit podcast. Welcome to the Living Spit podcast. Listen to the Living Spit podcast. It's on the way.